Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, the 8th of March 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me in the studio, Mike Robinson. Well, we're not going to mention the weather because it's so generally not spring-like in Plymouth. The budget, that should cheer people up, Mike.
Well, that's not very spring-like either, although it is a comedy show and it has been. It started at about 30 minutes ago. Philip Hammond announcing that this autumn statement that comes in the autumn will be replaced with an autumn budget, and this spring budget that he's giving today is going to be his last spring budget because that's going to be replaced with a spring statement. So that's all a bit yes, Minister. But anyway, what was he saying? Well, this on screen at the moment, first of all, we've got the spring budget 2017 background briefing issued by the House of Commons. It's full of useful information. Well, we'll come on to a little bit of that at the moment. But anyway, what is he saying? £1.3 billion boost for the NHS, £320 million for new schools, £500 million for skills training for 16 to 19-year-olds, and £500 million, well, actually, it's probably going to be £800 million for the National Productivity Investment Fund. This is research into technologies like artificial intelligence. We've covered that over the last couple of days. So it was interesting, this document, the spring budget background briefing. There's one graph in particular attracted my attention, and that was because if you remember back in January, Mark Carney had said that the savings rate, the amount of money that people are saving, has fallen towards pre-crisis lows, and consumer borrowing has accelerated notably. So Mark Carney in January giving a little bit of concern about the amount of money that people were borrowing at the moment. Well, also today, then we had this. Of course, this is talking about the European Central Bank. It's the headline from Bloomberg here saying rising European bank deposits wind up at ECB as lending sputters. And what the point they're making here is that, of course, with negative interest rates, you would expect that any money that banks had would be being lent out and not being deposited at the central banks. And although this is Eurocentric, it applies to Britain as well. So why are they leaving money at central banks and not lending it out? Well, there could be two reasons. Policy decision that they're not going to lend, but of course, they're leaving money on deposit at the European Central Bank because they need to meet the capital reserves that are required by the latest regulations. But the point here is, of course, it's costing them billions of euros to keep the money held at the central bank because of negative interest rates. So why am I talking about those two stories? Because this was in the briefing document, all about GDP growth and how well the economy is doing at the moment. But when you actually look at GDP growth, what's driving it? It's consumer spending. And what isn't driving it is investment. So we've got 1.9 on the scale there, 1.9, value of 1.9 for consumer spending. That's a trillion. That's all being driven by debt. And we've got a value of 0.1 trillion on investment and 0.2 trillion on government spending. That's really the point here, is that there's nobody borrowing any money because the money's not available from the banks because they're paying for it to be stored at the central banks.
And people have been talking about the fact that if you do analysis on Germany, and correct me if I got this one wrong, but basically businesses in Germany over the years have been able to borrow money at a cheaper rate, hence the powerhouse in the German economy. Now banks totally in control of money, nobody else is able to give it out.
Nobody gets a look in. And the other little graph from that briefing document was the UK government spending versus revenues in billions. And you can see how, all the criticism from the Tory government was of Gordon Brown's government and Gordon Brown's prudence and the amount of tax and spend that the Labour government did during their time in government. But as we can see, the Tories have been even worse here. Now, they're claiming that this is all coming back together and that they're going to be borrowing much less last year. But the current government debt is £1.7 trillion. That's £50 billion in interest payments per year alone and £62,000 owed per person in the country. So That's quite sizable. Nonetheless, they're going to give this boost to the NHS, they say, but they're going to borrow less next year, which means they're going to have to take money from somebody. But the other interesting point from the revenues there, of course, that's tax revenues. And what we're seeing is tax revenues outstripping inflation somewhat. So tax is clearly going up.
Good. That's the good news.
That's the good news. So there we go. But anyway, what else he's going to say, we have to wait and see, because, of course, it's taking place at the moment. And we'll have a proper analysis of what he is saying tomorrow, because we want to see what's in the detail.
Indeed. We'll just say that Justin Walker from the British Constitution Group is outside of Westminster as we speak. We haven't had a report yet, so we'll keep that for tomorrow. But what is Justin doing with other members of the British Constitution Group? They're busy handing out leaflets, pointing out that, of course, the whole debate over how much money the country has is false, because the government's taking money from international banks, which create the money from nothing. And Justin is pushing hard for reconsideration of the Bradbury pound, which is basically introducing money as credit based on the wealth of the nation. We can point out now, we've had to keep quiet on this for some time, but Mr. Corbyn, Labour leader, was amongst signatories to an early day motion about the Bradbury pound some time ago. He was all for it. He saw it as a way of dealing with this nonsense that there is no money. Now, all of a sudden, Mr. Corbyn has gone very quiet. He won't talk to Justin Walker. He won't debate the Bradbury. It appears what? He's under pressure, being silenced. Who knows what it is? But a 180-degree turn, and we now have the Labour Party simply walking alongside the Conservatives with the lie of money created from nothing loaned out to create debt.
Yeah, 50 billion in interest payments a year, as we say. It's incredible.
Ed. A pause, Mike. Yeah, I don't know what to say anymore. Yeah. We'll smile and move on.
Right, well, let's move on to WikiLeaks and Vault 7, the CIA hacking tools revealed. Well, what can we say about this? There's probably very little about it that should be a surprise to anyone. One thing that is of note, perhaps, is that the tools that they are that have been sort of revealed in this release by WikiLeaks make the point or suggest that end-to-end encryption applications such as WhatsApp are pretty much unbreakable as far as the CIA is concerned. So, in other words, they've got to find a way to get to compromise your television or your mobile phone or your computer. The timing of this is perhaps interesting because, of course, we've had all this stuff over the Russian intervention. And I'd like to really get a comment from Chris Bryant on this because, of course, he said that there's undoubted proof that it's the Russians that are intervening in people's elections. It's the Russians that are hacking. And if we listen to what Boris Johnson and Fallon were saying at the EU the other day, they were talking about more NATO cooperation with regard to cybersecurity against Russia. And yet we have this leak coming out now. So the timing's interesting because very suggestive as to who might be hacking what. So the timing interesting, the leaked document suggesting that the CIA could in fact hide their activities under the guise of being a foreign nation. But when we look at what they're actually doing, they've got keystroke loggers for Windows machines, they've got antivirus avoidance mechanisms. Apple Macs aren't immune from this. Plenty of tools for hacking those. The one that stood out most for me was the Samsung TV hack, the smart TV hack, where basically what they were doing was putting a piece of software on your TV, which made it appear as if the TV had switched off when you switch it off, but in fact the TV was still on, still monitoring conversations in your room, and if your smart TV had a webcam in it, then obviously still able to see what was going on in the room.
This is really scary stuff because it means people absolutely no privacy in their own home, and who's watching them? Not even a government. This is rogue agencies who are simply doing what they want.
Absolutely, but of course the question that has never really been answered is whether Samsung has that capability, for example, with their TVs. Or if Apple has, I mean, Apple denies it, but other manufacturers of PC, laptops and so on, we know that people cover up their and certainly security experts suggest that you cover up your webcam when it's not in use.
Yep.
It may not just be the CIA, but still interesting the timing of this release.
I would just add that, of course, GCHQ is implicated in all of this. Whenever you dig into these stories about the monitoring, the whole-scale monitoring of communications, we always come back to that special relationship between GCHQ and the American side, so CIA. So are we dealing with the British government, the American government, or are we dealing with so-called black ops, which is government bodies that are now out of control? I think it's the latter.
Yeah.
Well, we put a quick ad out again for the British Constitution Group Nottingham meeting. We encourage people to come to this meeting because we are providing the space for people to meet together, talk amongst each other, swap information, run workshops. People have said to us for a very long time they wanted more time to be able to mix and really do their own thing, I think is the expression. And so this really beautiful hall is now there, ready to go. Tickets are going, so if you haven't got your tickets yet, we say get online and get a ticket. £10 is not expensive. And if this event is the success that we believe it will be, we will be in a good position to run further events of a similar nature, which is helping people get together, share work and experience.
AV8.
Well, Ian Crane, AV8 coming up 19th to the 22nd of May. There were 40 tickets left yesterday. There are less now. So if you want to go to that event, you need to get online and book, because I think this one is simply going to be sold out. And well done, Ian, for taking the trouble again this year to put on a really excellent event.
OK, now, yesterday we mentioned this article in the Indictor magazine, Swedish Doctors for Human Rights denounced White Helmet's video, macabre manipulation of dead children and staged chemical weapons attack to facilitate a no-fly zone in Syria. Well, earlier today, I spoke to the author of that, Professor Marcello Ferrato De Noli. I began by asking him about his work with Swedish professors and doctors for human rights.
Well, at the moment, I am the chairman of the Swedish Doctors for Human Rights, which is an organization we founded for about 3 years ago in Sweden. And we also have started a magazine online called The Indictor, where we publish our analysis. And also we have another publication, which is called The Swedish Doctor for Human Rights Research and Reports. There we also publish analysis related to these issues.
Okay, and what we want to discuss today is this article that you've published on the Indictor website. The headline is Swedish Doctors for Human Rights denounce White Helmet's video, macabre manipulation of dead children and staged chemical weapons attack to facilitate a no-fly zone in Syria. Now, just before we get onto the details of this, the first thing I'd like to ask you is, how did you first hear about the White Helmets, and what led you to write the first article questioning their credibility?
It was in social media when I read the first reports on the activities of this organization. But then I had to do some research around this organization when it was announced in Sweden that an institution which is financed by governmental funds nominated and subsequently granted the White Helmets a prize, which is known as the Alternative Nobel Prize in Sweden. doing research for that article, then I found the work by Vanessa Bailey, astounding work, which gave me further information about the background of that organization and the context in which they are operating.
Okay, and you know, and to what extent do you believe the White Helmets have been pivotal, shall we say, in prolonging the war in Syria?
I wouldn't say pivotal, but indeed they are a contributing factor in prolonging this conflict, because they have been used to show that activities in the zone require more and more efforts from the part of the US-led alliance there, and fundamentally by the rebel groups that they are supported, financed, armed, and trained by Western countries, trying to influence in the area. My understanding is that the White Helmets function like partners and alibi for what is going on there. And then as long as their existence is put forward by the media, by the Western media, then the public will continue having that idea of that notion of atrocities that the same sources, the same powers that finance the White Helmets are trying to give to the public. So it's like a symbiosis. The existence of the White Helmets contribute to give that false notion, and ergo to continue with the conflict. And yes, that's what I can say about it.
Thank you very much for that. Well, look, let's look in some detail at the at your concerns about the event itself. This was the report of on the Sarmin attack. And if you could just give us some observations on what you think, what you believe is malpractice and the misuse of children, perhaps for propaganda purposes. Now, I don't really want, we're not going to show the video. The video is, or at least sections of the video are linked from your article on the Indictor if anybody wants to look at that. But what I do want to do is just show a couple of stills from the video. And so I just want to give a little bit of a warning for anybody that is sensitive to this sort of thing, that these images aren't necessarily the most pleasant. But Marcello, what was it that really gave you concern about the practices that were going on during this video?
Well, I can tell you how did I get to know that video. It was a recent report by Human Rights Watch, I believe, for 2 weeks before, or 2 weeks before than the Oscar award was bestowed to that film about the White Helmets. And then in that publication from Human Rights Watch, which was undoubtedly supporting the claims done by the organization White Helmets, it was linked, because it was in a retrospective presentation of claims done against the Syrian government. So there was linked this information about them allegedly conducted gas attack in Sarmin in Syria. So I went to study that, and then in research around that item, I found the video uploaded by the White Helmets in YouTube. I reacted immediately because of the obvious defective or flawed practices they were exercising upon the patients or even dead children that were in that room. And then I contacted my colleagues in the Swedish Doctor of Human Rights, and we have some specialists in bariatrics and good clinicians, if I may say so, with vast knowledge and experience on these things. So I asked them to submit some statements with regard to these events shown in the video. And those are the base of my article, which on behalf of the board of the human of the Swedish Doctor of Human Rights, I published in the indictor. Thank you.
Right. Well, we've shown a couple of stills from this, but this has got to be the most horrendous section of the video, where this child is having a needle placed in their chest, and quite unpleasant use of that needle following its insertion. I mean, that particularly stood out for me. But even just the fact that children being placed on top of what appeared to be dead adults in the field hospital, and also the way that CPR was being delivered in some of these. Now, I'm not qualified, so I can't really comment on it, but it didn't look correct to me, and particularly this procedure did not look correct. And so, you know, to have a group of doctors look at this and give their assessment is quite powerful. But I mean, what are your comments on what you saw from a medical standpoint?
Well, I would like to comment that the sequences you are showing, there we have, according to the statements of our doctors, we have a case of improper administration of intracranial injection, because in terms of life-saving procedures at that stage, CPR has to be administrated first, and then the injection with adrenaline, and then immediately thereafter another CPR has to be exercised there with the patient. So those things are not observed in the sequence shown in the video. And the doctor reporting that, which is a colleague with name Lena Oske, she even hypothesized on that if the child was not already dead, then he might have been threatened to life because of that wrong procedure. As a matter of fact, in another video uploaded by the same organization, which, if my translation is correct, they call themselves the Syrian Civil Defense of Libya region. So in another video, I saw that the same child coming into a room in the arms of one of those so-called rescue workers, and then he was still alive.
So he has passed away while in their care. Is that what you believe?
I think that anyone that is able to look at the videos uploaded, there are two main videos uploaded by the White Helmets on the 16th of March 2015, could get their own conclusions about that. They're, for me, very obvious.
Okay, well, I mean, where do you believe this leaves the credibility of NATO and Western governments that are promoting the White Helmets so strongly? And for that matter, media organizations, because of course this particular video, although they didn't show some of the more difficult sections to watch. Channel 4 News in Britain absolutely used sections of this video in some of their reporting. So where do you leave? Where do you think this leaves the credibility of organisations that are promoting the work of the White Helmets? And that's really the final question for this section.
Well, this is a process going on in the last years with regard to the information spread by the mainstream media. As you mentioned, now this video formed part of the report that the White Helmets delivered to in a room in a closed door meeting organized by Samantha Powers in 2015, and then we had reports after that meeting about this setting, and no one was questioning that. But then we have, as I said to you, as you know that very well, we have this social media development as an alternative to the mainstream media, and so the things are getting more and more spread and contributing to heightening consciousness among the public. So we are in that process now in which fake news are counter-arrested by information, verifiable information posted in the social media. That's one thing. But on the other thing, you have to observe that officially White Helmet still is getting credit by governmental institutions like the one I was mentioning in Sweden, providing them or granting them the Alternative Nobel Prize. We have the Hollywood thing there, giving them not that to them, but to the documentary who was referred to their work, and so on and so forth. So paradoxically, all those endeavors in which the power elite in the Western countries, paradoxically, I said, they are giving also them the effect, a discredit effect, since if they are sponsoring, supporting this kind of organization that undoubtedly are doing the work which is highly criticized from the point of view of ethics and menacing and even genuine, real saving life practices, then, as I said, it's like a boomerang going back to these governments and the media and their support and or finance.
The video is horrendous, and as I say, it is a particular note in this country because it was used by Channel 4 News.
The video does not show any evidence or testimony of any attack. This is one of the most peculiar aspects in this episode, because what Human Rights Watch is saying about the attack that would have been produced in March 2015 is that the two witnesses heard, not seen, heard one helicopter. And then they heard no explosions, nothing. And one of the anonymous witnesses, which is reported, turned out to be a functionary of the White Helmets. So yes, he was providing information. And the peculiar thing that has to be observed here is that the cameraman or the team who was doing the recording in the emergency room, they did not record anything outside the room or any exterior about referring to the attack itself, if that was true. So That is one question that this outlet that you're referring here, they could have investigated or you know, tried to confirm. And
well, indeed, so, but they could also even have asked for medical opinion, a professional medical opinion, which they don't seem to have done.
Now, it seems that they have not done that, but even more, it seems that they did not even care to provide themselves with the translation of what of the audio of the videos, of what the medics there and the white helmets personnel there was saying to each other. For instance, in the translation I could receive, it's clear that I don't know if it's a medic or a doctor. I mean, he's instructing the others to staple the children on top of the woman who, yeah, who is the fat woman there shown in the video.
I'd like to thank you very much for joining us, Professor Marcello Ferrata Dinoli. If people want to see what you are producing, please go and have a look at the Indictor magazine. You're also on Twitter. Any other way to contact you?
Well, in the article that you just shown, there are contact information where anyone interested could mail me or for that part, any other member of our editorial board, which are for the most part doctors. And on Twitter, of course, Professor's Blog, it's the name of my account on Twitter.
So there you go.
Well, I don't know what the response from our wider viewers and listeners is, but just watching some of the comments in our chat box, people utterly horrified about the information coming out. Really excellent interview, Mike, and isn't it wonderful to see that people like that doctor are now prepared to speak out on alternative media, and clearly he realises that now mainstream media utterly compromised in the West. So it's really up to anybody who can get quality information out with the evidence. While I was watching it, what was in my mind, having watched earlier this morning some of the brief clips of British MPs in Parliament, I started to want to describe their behaviour as children, but of course that's an insult to children. Where do you go then? You might describe them as behaving like animals. That's an insult to the animals. And you're left with a vacuum that we have people representing us in Britain whose behaviour is so horrific. Clearly, they're prepared to cover up criminal action if they're not involved in it themselves. They're prepared to cover up war crimes. They're prepared to cover up the abuse of children. And they sit in Westminster today cackling and laughing and making jokes while we are driving the country into greater and greater debt with a criminal international banking system. It seems to me that it's time for the wider British public to say we need to have a complete change of the individuals in Parliament, and it needs to happen very quickly. How else, Mike, do we solve this problem that we have the same MPs creating these wars and this violence overseas, and the little children that we've seen on screen, ultimately just a tiny percentage of the overall victims of that? Well, it is war crimes by the British government. And I think we need to use this language when we talk about it. We are being governed by war criminals. Well, where do we go? We're going to give you some good news, but it's going to come across in a very dark form. Let's go to this story, which has come from a Norfolk paper, the Evening News. And paper is describing two former Norfolk councillors who claim they were driven out when they raised concerns about children's services. Now, what is particularly interesting is that we have a councillor, former policeman UKIP, and we have a councillor from the Labour side. So this is really fantastic. We've got people now probably from totally different parts of society even, but they've come together even though they differ on what their political backgrounds. is background is. So we've got former policeman and deputy leader Councillor Stan Hebborn and former Labour Councillor Deborah Gihawi, and they claim that a company called MP Law, the council's lawyers, heaped pressure on them when they began to question cases involving the Children's Services Department. And Mr. Hebborn, who resigned in 2015, having been elected in 2013, said during his time as a councillor, he'd been contacted by people whose children had been taken into care and who had alleged miscarriages of justice. So let's get that headline up. We've got good people from different political parties speaking out, but the tale they are talking about is a very, very common one, because we know that in local authorities across the country, when elected councillors start to ask questions about what is going on in social services, particularly around children's cases, they are simply told to get their noses out as elected representatives of the people who elected them, officers in the council backed by the council, council's legal teams, are telling the councillors, you can't ask questions, you're not entitled to see documents, you've no right to investigate child cases. And by this means, of course, we now have a secret cell inside our local authorities where all matters to do with children, children being taken from their parents, cases being run through local authority courts, and of course, local courts. And we've also had the recent Devon and Cornwall case where an elderly man, his sister was put in prison because she took him out of the country to Portugal to put him in a care home in the sunshine. Anybody in the council that stands up and asks for answers gets put down. But what makes this case so interesting is we just did a little bit of research on MP Law before coming live on the programme. Here they are. Welcome. How can we help you? There's the telephone number top right. I did phone that number, but I just get a recorded message, so I couldn't get any personal comment from it. But where are they based? Well, here we are. MP Law, Norfolk County Council, County Hall. So now I'm really curious as to what's going on, because we seem to have a law firm embedded in a local authority, which is then being used to target and silence our own councillors.
Is it that the local authority has spun out their legal department into a private company?
I think this is exactly what we're looking at, Mike. I think we are looking at a profit-making legal company embedded inside the local authority. So the taxpayers pay the bulk of the burden, and then we've got a profit-making company on the side, which is going to do anything it can to get profit out of any case. But we might be talking about a few people, three or four, you might imagine, in a room. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So on their website, if you go for people, we've got a few listed. So this is not a two or three man woman operation, Mike. This is something else. But even that is not what's going on, because let's bring on some more faces. And if that's not enough, let's bring on some more faces. So all of this being run, it would appear, as a legal team within a local authority, and a legal team that this man in particular we should pay attention to, because he was a former police officer, Stan Hebborn. And he says the council's law department wanted him to hand over documents. These are the documents he had in relation to claims that children were being unlawfully taken. He said it felt like a fishing trip was being conducted to see what information he had and who could be incriminated by it. Gather in the evidence, see what is being produced to accuse the council or show defects in the council. And once you've got the evidence, of course, you can then work out how you're going to deflect it. So this former policeman was so incensed by the sheer number of cases brought to him and what he was seeing that he tried to ask questions inside the council, and then he is pressurised. And he goes on, he said he was constantly hearing from people who said their children had been taken away and that they would never see them again, but there seemed nothing I as a councillor could do to look into those cases. So this is not just an ordinary councillor, this is a trained policeman realizes something is wrong. What do the council do? They start to threaten him. Now let's bring in the other lady, because it becomes very interesting when we do that, because she has experience as a social worker, Deborah Gihawi. In 2012, she wrote to the then director of children's services, Lisa Christensen, to say she had got involved in cases involving children's services where she felt poor social work practice was in danger of leading to, quote, miscarriages of justice, in the removal of children. So this lady, brave enough to step forward and really say that there's something, there was something very, very serious going wrong. Is she praised? Is she encouraged? Is she supported? No, she's also pressurised and threatened. She was suspended from her city council duties amidst a claim from NP Law, she had committed a criminal offence in sharing information about the case, although she was later reinstated and no further action was taken. And this lady tried and tried and tried to get this information out, but she was being bullied by the council with the help of that embedded law firm. So she said this: I was challenging the ivory tower, but they would hide behind it's in the best interests of the children. I said I'm a councillor, I need to know about it, but the information would never come forward. If we don't question things, who will? Now, I think this is an exceptionally brave lady, and I'm just going to highlight something here because it may be important or it may not, but I was fascinated with the lady's eyes in this picture, because for me, those are almost pinpoint pupils. And I'm going to ask a question. Has this image been changed to undermine the lady? Now, if you think I'm clutching at straws here, I can say that a little while ago we had a conversation with a photographer who used to work at a particular local paper, and he was quite happy to say to us that the images of people's eyes were certainly changed, because that could dramatically change the opinion the viewer may have of the individual concerned. So I'm just going to say I'm a little bit curious that that image makes this lady look quite fearsome, I think would be a polite term, but she was doing the right thing. So was somebody trying to gently, or not so gently, undermine her. Now, praise where it's due, because we've got a UKIP councillor and a Labour councillor working together on what is right. Have a look at this Evening News article, because they are doing a specific investigation into children's services in Norfolk County Council. And these are some of the other articles that they list. And these are all quality articles, and the paper is still after information. I think that both these two individuals deserve a lot of praise. And perhaps if our viewers and listeners can make contact, or at least contact the local paper to say, well done, this may well be sufficient praise and impetus for people to come forward in other local authorities where we know that the same bully boy tactics are being used to silence anybody asking about children. So we'll end on the positive note that this is really good to see. We're now seeing people move away from the constraints of party politics, simply doing what is right, because as human beings, this is what we need to do. We'll just jump to the other side of the scale, and thank you very much for the people who sent us this article. Eton student who shared appalling abuse photos from his dorm computer of children as young as two being raped is spared jail. This is the classic headline. I'm not going to report too much on this story because the news has been pretty heavy so far today, but I'm going to say that the images included children forced to have sex with animals. This is the young man concerned, Andrew Picard, but in fact he's also Andrew Bookman, and this is where the story starts, and we'll go to Pride's Purge, because a really excellent article asking some key questions about this case and saying, isn't it interesting that this young man went to court under his mother's name and not his family name, which is Bookman. because that leads us to a successful lawyer and partner in a legal firm.
But it also means that the prosecution is under one name, so perhaps later on in life he may be able to hide behind the name that he didn't use in court.
This is absolutely correct, Mike. I'll just add a bit more that Pride's Purge posted. It said at the end of their article, which included documents and excerpts to prove what they were saying was true, allowing a defendant to use a false name could only happen with the agreement of the court, the prosecution, the police and the presiding judge. Must be useful to have friends in high places. So very high powered father law firm, very close to the City of London law firm advising banks. What we've got on here is a two-tier justice system, depending what your wealth and power base is.
In the chat box, somebody's saying Anthony Linton, and I guess that's a similar situation. And anybody who wants to look that up on the internet, I'm sure they'll get the details.
Indeed. Well, we'll just end on this. I think I'm right in saying that Mr. Tim Farron, was boasting in Westminster earlier this morning about Women's Day, International Women's Day. And there is a massive attack going on at the moment against women. Now, this does not work quite as people think. I've picked up on this article from Reveal. Hundreds of US Marines investigated for sharing photos of naked colleagues, these female colleagues. And some of the comments that have come out, this is from Sergeant Major Ronald Green. He says, we need to be brutally honest with ourselves and each other. This behaviour hurts fellow Marines, family members, civilians. It's a direct attack on our ethos and legacy. So the Marines standing up and saying we shouldn't put up with this, and they're quite right. Goes on to say this, as Marines, as human beings, you should be angry by the actions of a few. Ultimately, we must take a look in the mirror and decide whether we're part of the problem or the solution. We need to realise that silence is consent. Do not be silent. I thought of you when I picked that up, Mike, because, of course, you've consistently said this. It is not enough to know and do nothing. You need to take action. But what I wanted to do is remind people that the attack on women, the attack on families, the so-called war of the sexes, this is created doctrine. It's very dangerous. One of the good sources was Christopher Story's book, The EU Collective, Enemy of Its Member States. And this was part of the subversion matrix from a gentleman known as Thomas Schumann, who was a defector from the Soviet Union. And he warned that there was going to be an attack on Western society. And this is from an early version, Law and Order, Social Relations, Security, Internal Politics, Foreign Policy. It's going to be made legislative, not moral, rights versus obligations. And the trouble is going to be spread into the intelligence services, the police and the military. Now, what is that really talking about? Well, let's put it in this context. The women are being used as a weapon to destabilize a sexualized military. You sexualize the men, then you put the women in, and that's when the problem starts. This is the thing in detail, but here it is. Security. What was the plan to cause problem? Penetration and demoralization of intelligence community, police, military, brackets, homosexuality. So the gay agenda was to be used for political purposes. Women in the military, said here very clearly, Mike. And what is the aim? It's to destabilize the American military. So the men are to be blamed. Of course, they have been heavily sexualized, as many families in other countries. You then introduce the women, then the problem starts, and what have you got? Chaos. So we need to look under the surface of what's really taking place in the country. And if you're caught up in a feminist movement, you are being played by the government. If you are caught up in a gay agenda movement, you are being played. Ultimately, these people are out to destroy all of us and our society. We'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us. Get your minds onto some lighter things today, but we need to recognise what's happening. We need to speak out, and we need to call things as they really are. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back same time tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.